Welcome to another episode of Blueprints of Disruption. I am your host, Jessa McLean. Another boat has set sail as part of the Freedom Flotilla Coalition. Its goal, like the others, is to break the blockade around Gaza. Some of you might be surprised that there have actually been efforts dating back as far as 2007 to break the blockade by sea. This is because the Zionist occupation forces have prevented the most basic goods from entering the Strip since 2005. They've been heavily restricting the movement of people since 1991, but after withdrawing settlers from the area, Israel began restricting more and more items. By 2010, things like cement, wood, plaster, fishing equipment, notebooks, newspapers, food items like chocolate, seasoning, salt, and fresh meat were not allowed in. And as you know, next to nothing is getting in now. What is getting in is being distributed by the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which is responsible for the sites where children are being gunned down, lining up for food and water. So this is why organizations like the Freedom Flotilla Coalition have been sending boat after boat. The goal is to get aid to the people who need it most, but it's also to highlight the inhumanity of the blockade itself. The most recent launch you may have heard was the Madeleine back in June 2025. Most notably, there was a European Union Member of Parliament Rima Hassan and famous environmentalist Greta Thunberg. They both participated. That boat was boarded in international waters by armed agents of the Zionist state. Some of the activists were jailed. All of them were eventually deported. There have been far more violent outcomes than that, though. Most notably, back in 2010, when activists, 10 of them from Turkey, were murdered by Israeli commandos who stormed the humanitarian vessel in the early morning. And a UN investigation found that many of them had been executed. The risks these folks are taking are real. But that isn't what's at the forefront of their minds. They want us talking about Palestine and about the siege on Gaza. We were lucky enough to get one of the flotilla participants on the line. Dr. Yipeng Gi is a doctor from Canada. He's going to talk about why he's joined 17 others on the Handala and what they hope to accomplish. He's also talking about the lessons learned and what kind of preparations it takes to pull off an action so bold. Just a warning that because we are interviewing Dr. Gi while he travels in the middle of the Mediterranean, the sound quality and connection weren't the greatest. At one point, Dr. Gi actually does cut out completely, and the rest of the episode is made up of voice notes he graciously sent over to us to answer the rest of our questions. A big shout out to the Movement Media Hub for helping make that all happen. So without further ado, here is our discussion with Dr. Gi from on board the Handala.
My name is Yipeng Gi. I'm a family doctor, also trained in public health. I primarily work on unceded, unsurrendered traditional Algonquin Anishinaabeg territory, but I'm currently calling in from the Handala Freedom Flotilla boat. That's, I'm not exactly sure where we are, but the coast of Italy.
You have done a lot. We have seen you make statements on what you've witnessed in Gaza, held press conferences here in Canada, trying to pressure our politicians. But this is a step beyond anything I think any of us have experienced that are listening, for sure. Maybe not for a doctor who's worked in Gaza, but still, can you help us understand why you would take this risk and this huge journey as part of the Freedom Flotilla Coalition?
The Freedom Flotilla Coalition has been a long-standing group. I am just so inspired and humbled to be here and to support the team, to learn from the team, and to be around people who are in this moment doing what is within their power, in accordance with international humanitarian law, to deliver humanitarian aid, but to make it also a very important political statement. Countries around the world, including the country that I'm from, Canada, remains heavily complicit and actively in support of the ongoing genocide by Israel through arms trade, ongoing free trade, through not using everything within their political and diplomatic toolbox to sanctions to pressure Israel to stop the slaughter in Gaza. Here are everyday people doing what they can within their power to do this and to center the Palestinian people in Gaza, to center the children of Gaza, is a major focus of this Handala boat because of the things that are being carried in this boat, including baby formula, including prosthetic limbs for the children of Gaza, who now have the highest number of child amputees per capita in any part of the world. And that is in Gaza because of Israel's genocide on the Palestinian people.
Just knowing how badly these items are needed and having seen the situation in Gaza firsthand, I can only imagine the weight you and your fellow activists on board must be feeling right now. How will you and the crew spend the next few days before nearing the blockade?
Our team is preparing for every possible outcome. We've gone through quite a bit of training before our departure, and there will be more training in the days ahead as we make a technical stop the next day or so. And we'll have to kind of make sure that the ship is, you know, in the best possible shape possible for the long journey ahead.
As you can probably hear, this is where we started to have a little bit of technical difficulty with the interview. So what we were able to do is submit questions to Yipeng and have him send voice notes back. We've stitched those together for the remainder of the interview. He was talking about those technical stops and how they provided opportunities for activists to train and prepare for various scenarios, not just their eventual encounters with the IOF. And in case you don't pick up on this, rather than focusing on the perils he and other activists might be facing, Dr. Guy again pivots to make the very important connection to others traveling in the same waters, but under very different circumstances.
There are tens of thousands of people who travel these waters to try to seek refuge and are actually illegally treated by these coast guards and the surrounding countries around the Mediterranean Sea, either deported or, you know, treated as if their lives do not matter. Their surveillance drones actually circle these waters, and they know what happens in these waters, and they will allow people seeking refuge to be on boats that are not safe for them, and they will see them drown and die. And that is actually also part of the training that and the things that the team has to be ready for encountering as well.
On how to possibly document and then save migrants.
Yes, on how to support search and rescue if and when that were to happen, because we know that these waters encounter people quite often who are seeking refuge, safer places to be, and travel these dangerous waters for that journey, and are completely mistreated by a lot of these coast guards. And often the reasons for their place of origin is capitalist, you know, imperial colonial violence inflicted by the West on some of these North African states.
Really showcases how interconnected all of these issues become and how the work has to be connected as well. It must be fascinating being with activists, a global collection of activists in such an important moment as well. And you talk a lot about training. You've mentioned it a few times, and learning. What else are you learning from this journey, even maybe on a personal level?
I'm learning a lot from the conversations that I'm having in advance of the boat and being on this boat with, 18 others, and the conversations that we have kind of go everywhere from why we're on this boat to who we are as people, to the things that the knowledge and the wisdom and the care that we carry with us, because any one of us, we're not on the boat as individuals. We have been on this boat and are on this boat because of teams and groups of people that support us and support a broader political movement for the liberation of Palestine. And drawing on those lessons and drawing on that collective wisdom, there's so much care in that kind of space of learning from one another. And quite practically, there's a lot to be learned for me personally, like what it is to spend time on a boat. How do we divide up chores on the boat? How do we take care of each other on this small vessel? And all of the logistics that go into being able to work as a team to be able to make sure we're taking care of each other and that we ultimately can make each leg of this journey a safe and smooth one. I was at the Global March to Gaza in Egypt just a few weeks ago, and there was a sentiment of, oh, let's send lots of boats now. Let's send lots of flotillas. And I think that kind of enthusiasm is great, but there's also so much behind the scenes work. And I think we have to be really noble in that we build a movement and how we put that energy into building a lasting movement, build capacity to be able to do, you know, if it is 1,000 flotillas, to build up that capacity. Because I have seen so much work go into this one flotilla, and all the people that are doing all the things necessary to make this mission possible, and we're still bringing in people to help do certain kinds of repairs, and so it's so much amazing learning and work for everyone, but in particular for myself, to kind of see the whole operation of it. And I hope to, carry forward that wisdom, and so that we can keep doing this, so we can send a boat from Canada, so we can send a boat from other places like Ireland. But it requires a lot of organizing.
I imagine there's many, many logistical things that need to be taken care of that we don't even think of. I mean, your phone overheating is just a tiny, tiny example. But I mean, what were the biggest barriers?
I don't know if I can... speak directly to the different barriers that many different folks face getting onto the flotilla. It's been mostly, I certainly have much more insight into my own kind of thought process. And since I'm not making the entire journey to Gaza and getting off at this port called Gallipoli, Italy, the thought process is a little bit different. But, in speaking to a handful, quite a few of the different folks going all the way to Gaza on this flotilla, I think people are very much kind of made peace and understood the different consequences of what might happen, let alone interception, but also the possibility of severe injury and death because of, the track history of what the Israeli military has done to activists who have tried to break the siege by sea. So we think about the 10 Turkish national activists who were on the Mavi Marmara in 2010 who were killed by the Israeli military. 9 of them directly, and another one was in a coma afterwards and later passed. So, of course, that history and legacy stays with the Freedom Flotilla Coalition around the risks involved, but it certainly hasn't stopped people from organizing and mobilizing additional flotillas. This is the 37th flotilla, so we certainly wish and hope for the best as this Handla flotilla takes off in a few days from Gallipoli, Italy, and on the way to Gaza very soon.
With that history in mind and the most recent boarding of the Madeleine in June, I imagine there was already been decisions made and preparations for what the activists on board would do if engaged by the IOF. So we asked Dr. Guy if he could shed any light into what those planned responses would look like.
Yeah, so it's hard to kind of explain the exact plans with respect to responding to a possible and imminent Israeli interception. There's many different scenarios that could play out, but the team will certainly kind of, you know, run through these kinds of scenarios and be as best prepared as possible in ensuring the safety of the crew members. But I don't know if I can speak more beyond that because, there's a degree of safety in kind of keeping some of these things as best as we can within the crew, within the flotilla team. And it's arbitrary how the Israeli occupation forces really treat activists. But what we know has been shown to be helpful is attention, witnesses. So when the international community solidarity movement is has their eyes on the whereabouts of the flotilla, and we can have the capabilities of live streaming, for example, there will be an Al Jazeera journalist on board as well, so to be able to document in real time any possible illegal acts by the Israeli occupation forces. This is all for the protection and the safety of the crew members.
Obviously, we absolutely understand protecting that information. It sounds like after so many years and 37 boats sent, the organizers are well-versed in all the possibilities, best, worst-case scenarios that they might come across. These can even be the kind of things that we apply to organizing back in Canada. So we asked, what other lessons could he share with the audience?
You know, I think I spoke a bit about this as the... There's a role for all of us in learning from one another and the ways in which we organize and mobilize any kind of action, any kind of solidarity work, and to learn from the crew, coordination team for the Freedom Flotilla's past and present and future. There's so much wisdom and care within this space of activism. So I think there's a lot of personal and movement growth to be had, and I feel very privileged and humbled to be able to have so many really interesting but also insightful conversations with folks on board, folks who helped prepare us a launch, and the many conversations that are still yet to take place here in Gallipoli, Italy, as we prepare the flotilla for a final kind of departure to Gaza. And so all these lessons will be really important moving forward as we continue to build a movement for a liberated Palestine, including more flotillas, but also there are so many important lessons to draw for other kinds of intersectional movements for collective liberation.
Although the folks on board don't want us focusing on them and on Palestine instead, we still wanted to know what we could do to help the flotilla.
Like I mentioned before, the Israeli occupation forces will use less force and less brutality if there are witnesses to their crimes. It's obviously not a guarantee because we've seen them do horrible, horrible things to activists, to Palestinians, time and time again. But one thing that has shown to be effective is to bear witness, to not be silent, and to amplify, but also remember, as much as people will want to make the story about the Handala Freedom Flotilla, and as much as it is an inspiring story, as the previous flotillas have been, right? This is the 37th Freedom Flotilla under the FCC or the FFC banner. you know, the story is the genocide in Gaza. The story is the absolute necessity for the liberation of the Palestinian people in occupied Palestine. That is the story, and this is a small chapter in that broader movement and broader story for a movement for a liberated Palestine within our lifetimes.
The story is indeed the genocide and the role Canada is playing in that. And as you heard, visibility is critical. So be sure to check out the show notes for ways to find and follow Dr. Guy, links to track the Handala and other flotillas, and more information on the situation in Palestine. Because of the technical difficulties related to trying to interview someone on a boat, I didn't get to thank Dr. Guy personally for taking the time to call into the studio, to persevere through bad connections, and then send us the responses so that we could put this together for you. So thank you so, so much. Thank you to all the activists who have boarded a boat to break the blockade and the many others helping those ships set sail. There are so many roles to fill in the movement to free Palestine. I hope our show, in some small way, helps you find yours. Thank you for listening. Until next time, keep on disrupting.